Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and as always, streaming on YouTube. 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476 is the number to jump on board with us. You could always hit me up on the good old cesspool of Twitter or on Instagram, where I'm always straight flexing, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. And by the way, I have a lot of pressure on me today. So since I am a 30 under 30 award winner for my alma mater, Temple University, they bestowed the honor upon me today to take over their Instagram account. So they want to do like a Temple takeover. Here's one of our alums, you know, show them a day in your life and kind of do all that. Well, their Instagram account has over 100,000 followers. So I'm just waiting to send like something accidental, or I post something the wrong way, or I offend somebody, and then it ends up being Zach Gelb canceled, and we don't even have a job by 6 p.m. Eastern time when we do get out of here. But anyway, we should have a fun show today. Josh Pastner, the former college basketball head coach, is going to join us at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific time. I thought the tournament was subpar and underwhelming through the round of 64. So in the opening round, the first round of the NCAA tournament, I didn't think it was wonderful, but I sat here on the air on Friday when we had a day and a half of the tournament, and I said, with all the big seeds still alive and looking like through the weekend, right, when you get into the round of 32 and more so who survives after the round of 16, I thought, or going out of the 32 into the Sweet 16, I said, I think from the Sweet 16 and on, we're going to have a sensational tournament. Now, I kind of miscalculated that because the round of 32, I thought, and it's just one man's opinion, that on Saturday and Sunday, we had riveting games, we had good storylines, and it's almost funny to me how when we do have these major upsets, and right, we've been fortunate since 2018 to see two number one seeds fall, three number two seeds fall. And when those teams go on long runs, there is always somebody that goes, eh, you know, I really don't want to see these Cinderellas advance out of the first round because, you know what, it doesn't make for a good tournament when they're in the Elite Eight or the Final Four and there's a blowout. So when I watch the opening rounds of the tournament and people are bitching, oh, no buzzer beaters on the first day of the tournament, the first round, you know, no 16 or 15 or 14 or even a 13 winning. I sit here and I go, aren't you the same people? And it's almost you damn you don't. That bitch about the tourney not being great late if a Cinderella's around. And now you're upset that that Cinderella isn't there. Each year, the tournament is different. And I don't think you make a general big statement on the tournament that will impact tournaments for years to come. Like I was told one and done was going to ruin college basketball. You know, NIL now. Oh, you won't get Cinderellas with all the money. It's like, you can't make that evaluation yet. But yes, when you sit here through the first two rounds of the tournament, and we have four number one seeds, three number two seeds, two number three seeds, three number four seeds, a five seed, two six seeds, and a 10 seed. And the 10 seed, you know, it's not fair to just say it's Arkansas. It's Arkansas with John Calipari. Hello, sign me up. The round of 32 was really the start of this tournament. And I think from the Sweet 16 and on, it's going to be a magnificent final 2 weeks of the college basketball season. You look at the teams remaining in the matchups. Auburn and Michigan. Hello, Bruce Pearl and Auburn made a massive statement this weekend. You know, it's one thing to crush Alabama State 116, but that's a very good Creighton team. I thought Creighton could have pulled off the upset. Auburn was clearly the better team. Dusty May, he knows how to win in this NCAA tournament. You saw what he did at FAU. Michigan, they beat UC San Diego, and everyone said they were going to upset Michigan, and then they beat Texas A&M. Auburn-Michigan, fun matchup. Ole Miss-Michigan State, incredible coaching matchup. And some people are like, Zach, why are you confident that Ole Miss is going to get to the Sweet 16 before the start of the tournament? And I said, because of Chris Beard. Chris Beard is one of the best coaches we have in college basketball. And look at what he's done the last 2 years at Ole Miss. And it just shows you how good of a coach he is. And with Chris Beard, it's just how much longer can they keep him? I know they redid his contract. I think he'll be back next year because I don't think there's a marquee job there right now that Chris Beard is a fit for. But a year from now and the next big job that opens, you know, I really do believe Chris Beard's going to be a player. But think about the coaching matchup, Chris Beard and Tom Izzo. And by the way, think about the raspiness that you'll have with both of those coaches just speaking to the media with Beard and Izzo. So that's a very good part of the region of that bracket. Then you have Florida and Maryland. Florida had their scare up against UConn. UConn, for 37 minutes of that game, I thought were the better team. But down the stretch, Florida, and you knew UConn wasn't going to go out without a fight, even though they're not the strong team this year, you knew that UConn was going to show you the heart of a champion. And they did that. Florida didn't play their best brand of basketball over the weekend, and it was still good enough to beat UConn. And now you set up a Florida-Maryland matchup with the Crab 5, which, by the way, epic nickname. Best nickname in the tournament since Florida Gulf Coast at Dunk City. But the Crab 5 with the Fab 5 feeling and all that stuff, phenomenal job by Maryland. And they gave you that signature moment, NCAA tournament, right? It looks like they're going to lose after Colorado State hits a three to put them up by one. And then you had the Queen game winner as well. And up to debate, controversy. When I saw it live, I didn't think it was a travel. When you slow it down, yes, you could say it's a travel by the letter of the law. But do they ever call that? No, they do not. So that sets up a fun offensive matchup between Florida and Maryland. Texas Tech, Arkansas. Calipari, and we'll get more into him in just a second, becomes a major storyline in this tournament. The only double-digit seed remaining. And not only that, look at where Coach Cal was a year ago, right? Needed to leave Kentucky. It was time for him to go. And now, a year later, he's at Arkansas, where at the end of Kentucky, he had some bad losses. You know, the most recent one was the last one to Oakland. And now look what he's done. You had John Calipari win his opening round game up against Bill Self and Kansas. And then you had John Calipari go toe-to-toe with Rick Pitino and be the better team there as Pig Suey's off to the Sweet 16 and they'll go up against Texas Tech. And no disrespect to Texas Tech, but I want Arkansas to advance to the Elite Eight and I would like to see them play for a spot in the Final Four up against the winner of Florida and Maryland. Then you circle this game, Kentucky and Tennessee. Mark Pope, right? He replaced John Calipari. Mark Pope in Kentucky, I thought going into that game, they were not going to beat Illinois. It's one thing, right? You beat Troy, then you're going up a very good program with Brad Underwood. And Kentucky just did a magnificent job yesterday, pretty much leading from wire to wire. And they did an incredible job on the defensive side of the ball. But you look at Kentucky, they're now going up against Tennessee, who I think is an underappreciated two seed. Like Tennessee, right? It's with Rick Barnes. He's never won a national championship. Been to a Final Four in the early 2000s when he was at Texas. You know, all right, they beat Wofford, big deal. Then they were in command and in control up against UCLA. That's going to be a really fun matchup. And also, Kentucky has beat Tennessee twice this year. Houston, Purdue. Painter, incredible coach. Purdue, right? They beat McNeese. You saw McNeese beat Clemson, and Clemson only had 13 points in the first half. You had Purdue beating High Point. A lot of people thought McNeese and High Point could be upsets. McNeese was. High Point wasn't. Purdue takes care of business up against McNeese. Will Wade now off to NC State. But Purdue-Houston, I still think Houston is, I don't want to say they're going to win the game at ease, but I'd be very surprised if they lose to Purdue. But then Houston will have a test with whoever wins between Kentucky and Tennessee. And then you get to the Duke region. Arizona almost choked that game away last night. And that would have been a Tommy Lloyd classic in the NCAA tournament. But they survived. They advanced. Now they go up against Duke. And Duke's the most dominant team in the country. Duke is the best team in the country. The Cooper Flagg injury was kind of all evaporated into thin air in the opening round game up against Mount St. Mary's when he stuck out his tongue and celebrated emphatically after the slam dunk. But it's all right. One thing to blow out a 16, that's expected. Then you're going up against a Baylor team similar to UConn, right? I know Baylor won their championship a few years ago, UConn coming off back-to-back, but Scott Drew, heart of a champion, you know they're not going to go out. You would think easily going into that game, but Duke just crushed and absolutely annihilated and made it easy up against Baylor. So do I think Arizona will beat Duke? No, I do not. I would be very shocked if we're sitting here and Duke is not off to the Elite Eight. And then you got BYU-Alabama, which could be a fun matchup as well. BYU's offense is awesome. Now, they got lucky late because they went from maybe the most confident team in the tournament for most of that game up against Wisconsin to the final 2-3 minutes. They couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat, for crying out loud. And they were just trying to throw the ball away and give that game away. And Alabama's offense, we know how good Alabama has been, an incredible coaching job his first few years at Alabama with Nate Oates, who I loved when he was at Buffalo. But BYU-Alabama should be a good one. So I look at this NCAA tournament, the 16 teams remaining, this is fun. This is really good, but I think there's two takes off the weekend. We'll get into the Dan Hurley conversation and his antics coming up at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But I want to delve into John Calipari and Rick Pitino because that was such a highly anticipated matchup. Let's start with Pitino. I wanted to start the show saying I understood what he was doing. I did. R.J. Lewis just did not have it. He was, what, 3-17 in the game. And Rick Pitino did an interview locally in New York with Brandon Tierney. He used to host in this time slot for years and is the color commentator for Johnny's Basketball on the radio, and Sal Licata. And this was about like 2 weeks before the tournament started. And Rick Pitino even admitted, like, this is a team with the way that we are inconsistent shooting and the free throws that we could lose early in the tournament or we could easily go to an Elite Eight. So St. John's, they win the Big East regular season championship. Then, even after some slow starts in the semifinal and championship game, they just absolutely smoked their two opponents. And the second half, they won those games just going away. And I was in the building for one of them. But St. John's, their shooting killed them. And more importantly, when you have the Big East player of the year, you would think Rick Pitino, for a team that's ahead of the process, would go down with what got him there, right? Like, you don't bench. And you could make the case that maybe the way that Zubi's been playing recently, that Zubi's their best player. But RJ is the Big East player of the year. So you don't think you would bench him for practically the final 5 minutes of a second-round NCAA tournament game with a trip to the Sweet 16 on the line. But in the moment, I thought to myself, I can at least understand it because nobody else was hitting it because he wasn't hitting a shot and he was god-awful. But the problem with that is you know what your flaw is with your team. Either they're on or they're not. You know, there's no middle ground. Like if Jalen Milroe was a basketball player, he would go to St. John's. And what I mean by that, it's because the ceiling he's on, he's dynamite. Like you saw what he did up against Georgia, right? But then when he's off, like Oklahoma and Tennessee, it's just no awareness and a rough watch. And that was St. John's. When their guys are playing defense and hitting shots, they could easily have got to a Final Four, maybe won the entire NCAA tournament. But when they're off, no one else lends a helping hand. And that's the problem. How great RJ was all throughout the season, they needed somebody else to bail him out. And 4 minutes, or 5 minutes actually, is too long of a time when no one's bailing you out to keep him on the bench. So I understood it at first. All right, give him a breather for a second. All right, see if somebody else could hit some shots. But also, I still just have that alarm that goes off into my head that goes, I love Pitino. I love him. I love Rick Pitino. He's so fun to watch, coach. Everywhere he goes, the guy wins. Providence, Kentucky, Louisville, you know, you name it. In college, he goes, they win. Look what he's done the last 2 years at St. John's. It's unbelievable. But you could separate the praise of what he did and what he's done and what I think he will continue to do with the decision in the game. Because, you know, even though I sound 50-50 on it, if you make me lean one way or another and you just say, they're going to bench RJ for the final 5 minutes, well, you know what? I'd rather go down swinging with my best players. And you don't have a lot of great players. Zubi and RJ were playing great for you this year. RJ just did not have it in the game. But isn't what St. John's is, how these guys just took such big steps the last few years? you know, and they came out of nowhere with Patino, and they've been a slow starting team. So there's a better chance of you winning that game with RJ on the court than him being on the bench. So that's why I'm not going to go to the level of, you know, crushing Rick Pitino, but I do lean from a little understanding, but I understand the criticism more importantly, and it was the wrong decision. And this is where he lost me, because Rick Pitino could say whatever he wants. And I'm not saying that Rick Pitino is going to get up on the podium and just be, you know, like open up everything and tell you everything and slam one of his players. I'm not saying that. But Rick Pitino can say whatever he wants, and his explanation, I think, even tells me he believes, even though he didn't say it, that he made the wrong decision, and even he's second-guessing himself. This was Rick Pitino on why R.J. Lewis was kept on the bench.
You had R.J. on the bench, you know, for a pretty long stretch at the end. Was that just because he just wasn't making them, or was there something more to it?
Played 30 minutes. It's a long time.
So he was tired?
No, played 30 minutes, and I went with other people. You already know the answers, Roger. You're asking leading questions. You already know it. So don't ask leading questions. You already know why he didn't play. Okay.
Was there one play with RJ that made you sit him the last 5 minutes?
You know he was 3-for-17. You know he was 0-for-3. So you're answering your own. I'm not going to knock one of my players.
So here's what I don't get. You started off with the 30 minutes crap. We're in the NCAA tournament. It's survive in advance. I don't think RJ was tired. That's why that's not why he was on the bench. Everyone knows that. So you don't have to start with that crap. You could have just said, he didn't have it tonight. We wouldn't be here without him. And I tried to find something from someone else in desperation. And that's a decision I made. And obviously it didn't work out. Where you're telling us what you did. You're not coming off condescending. And also, you're not throwing your kid under the bus. So the Pitino answer, I didn't love post-game. I almost hated the answer more post-game than the actual decision when I was watching it live during the game. I thought the answer made the decision even worse. And if St. John's would have won the game and someone would hit a big shot down the stretch, no one's criticizing Rick Pitino. But that's the way that this works. Now, on the other side, John Calipari. I have loved John Calipari for years. Maybe it's just with college basketball, but I love a big personality coach. I like a coach that gets under the skin of people and a coach that 50% of the people love him, 50% of the people hate him. With all that being said, with what happened at Kentucky, it was time for Calipari to leave and it was time for Kentucky to move on from him. But look at what has happened since then, right? You have Calipari go team up at Arkansas with the Tyson family. Right, get all the NIL money, come on in. Who would have thought, forget 2-3 months ago. How about 2 weeks ago? How about a week and a half ago? Right, on Selection Sunday, who would have thought a week ago that John Calipari would win not one but two NCAA tournament games? Where towards the end of Kentucky, not only would he lose, but he would lose to some teams that you're scratching your head saying, how the heck does that happen when John Calipari has all this talent compared to some of these Cinderellas? So Calipari goes to Arkansas in year one, beats Bill Self, survives that game, then goes toe-to-toe, and his team was better than Rick Pitino's team. And now they're off to the Sweet 16. That decision for John Calipari to leave Arkansas has worked. But it doesn't stop there. Because Mark Pope then goes from BYU back home to Lexington, where he played college basketball and won a championship as a player. And Mark Pope now has Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Which I did not think was going to happen before the NCAA tournament. And I love Mark Pope. Mark Pope has been on this show a ton of times. I thought it was just a matter of time that he was going to get a bigger job than BYU. I didn't think it was going to be Kentucky. But that hire a year later has worked. And not only that, because you hit the trifecta here. So then BYU became open. And Kevin Young gets brought over from the Suns to coach BYU. And BYU is a top recruit coming in next year in the country. But right now, they're in the Sweet 16. Look at that. That's remarkable. Because rarely in sports, you have a win-win-win. Rare in sports, you have a win-win. Let alone a win-win-win. A win all around. But this is just a triangular win for Kentucky, for Arkansas, and for BYU. And it's cool that all three are in the Sweet 16. So I feel happy for John Calipari, who the criticism the last few years was fair. Let's not hide. Let's not run from it. It was time to leave, and it was time for Kentucky to move on from him. But it doesn't mean that Kentucky basketball, obviously them being a blue blood, still can't succeed without Cal. They succeeded before Cal, and they'll succeed after Cal, as evident. And it also doesn't mean that John Calipari, all of a sudden, who's a Hall of Fame coach, forgot how to do this stuff. And he goes to the SEC, stays in the SEC, to Arkansas, with the resources, Pig Suey, and now Pig Suey, pigs can fly. They're flying to the Sweet 16. What a story. Awesome. Really damn cool. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. What's your biggest takeaway from the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament as we're down to our final Sweet 16 teams? 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. I still have not remembered the phone number yet. 888-710-4ISN. I think I remember that part. But the 888-710-4476 part I have not remembered. But that's how you can get on board with our brand new phone lines that did launch last week. All righty, we'll take a timeout. All four number one seeds do advance. And I'm looking at who's the favorite in the NCAA tournament. I'll give you the top three teams, in my opinion, one, two, and three in order, that have the best chance to win it all. We'll take a break. We'll come on back in 5 minutes. Zach Gelb Show, off and running, very busy Monday, another week right here on the Infinity Sports Network. So this isn't a show where we just agree or disagree for the sake of disagreeing. Like, there are some shows out there that, all right, one host will say something, then the producer will be like, oh, I totally disagree, and then you go to the other producer and like, no, you're both wrong, and it's like, well, it's only one or the other. So it's like, we can't both be wrong. So I'm just going to ask this simple question. If you had to respond right now, and let's say your life savings are on the line, Duke or the field to win it all? Stu, what would you do? Would you go Duke or the field to win it all? Your life savings are on the line.
Cooper Flagg's healthy. They're flying. I'd go Duke.
Samter, Duke or the field?
Just playing the stats and the odds, I have to go with the field.
Okay. Now, it would be funny since...
You're both idiots.
You said one thing, and then Samter said the other thing, and I just said, we won't do something in an A-B question, and then how it does go down. I think you're both idiots. Well, that statement could be true, but I would lean with Stu. Duke right now looks like the best team in the country. I thought they were the best team in the country going into this tournament. There was just a question of what Cooper Flagg was going to be. But even so, even if it took a while for Cooper Flagg to get going, we just saw them in the ACC tournament without Cooper Flagg still find a way to be the preeminent team in the ACC. And I know people say, oh, what does that mean? The ACC is down. But Duke, we all know how elite they are. We know John Shire has done a really good job in the aftermath of Coach K, but now it's time to win it all, and you clearly have the talented team to do so. And you saw over the weekend, start off on Friday, 22 minutes for Cooper Flagg, 14 points, 7 rebounds. Within 2 minutes into that game, you knew he was good. And then up against Baylor, he played 29 minutes, you know, ended up getting 18 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. He looks absolutely phenomenal, and that's why he's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Now, just because you're going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft doesn't mean you're going to win it all. But right now, with him being healthy and how good of a team they already had with him not being healthy, it's very tough for me to pick against Duke. So I do think Duke is going to win it all. If I can't pick Duke, then I would go to Florida. Because what Florida did this weekend actually may have been more impressive than what they did in the SEC tournament. Because we've seen Florida... really, even though they've been a really good team and a great team all throughout the season, we saw in the SEC tournament, that's when they finally got some respect. And it was really that Alabama game where they crushed Alabama 104-82, and then they didn't even play their best brand of basketball up against Tennessee. And you never really thought that Florida was ever going to lose to Tennessee in that SEC championship game. But you had 14 teams make the NCAA tournament this year from the SEC. And Florida, even with them winning the SEC tournament, and a lot of people were picking them to win it all or get to the championship game, like my tournament pick, and this is not a hot take, this is not me going out on a limb, it's going with two number one seeds, but before the tournament started, I said Duke, Florida, Duke's going to win a high-scoring national championship game. But Florida going into the tournament was playing like the best team in the country, even though I thought Duke was the best team in the country. But what they did up against UConn, where they had every reason to lose that game, like, you watch the first 36, 35 minutes of that game, you would have thought UConn was going to win the game, and we would have been sitting here today singing the praises of Dan Hurley and what a remarkable coach Dan Hurley is, back-to-back national champions, and went on a longer run this year than what we could have imagined entering the NCAA tournament. But down the stretch, Florida and the Gators were unleashed. Florida and the Gators were not put out, and they were circling, and then they just quietly pounced. And there's always a game in the NCAA tournament. You know, it's rare. I know UConn, right, is an exception. But it's rare in the NCAA tournament when your team is standing on the podium at one shining moment, listening to one shining moment, having the championship trophy after winning a national championship, that there's not at least one scare you type of game when you win a game that just as you won it, you could have easily just as lost it. And that was the test for Florida. Because UConn, you knew, even if it wasn't their strongest team in the last 3 years, that they weren't going down without a fight. And not only were they not going down without a fight, it looked like for a while they were going to win a 10-round fight or they were going to knock out Florida. But even though through the first 7 rounds or so, 8 rounds or so, UConn looked like the team, right, the old champion, and they were going to find a way to just continue this magical run and do this incredible job and this incredible moments that we've seen the last few years, even though they won the first 8 rounds in the 9th round, Florida threw a knockout punch, and they ended up winning the game. So that, to me, is why I put Florida as the second-best team in this tournament. Duke is one, because any championship team needs to win a game that they probably should have lost, if we're just being honest. And Florida wasn't anywhere close to playing their best brand of basketball, but in the defining moments of the game, they were the more intelligent team, and they made their free throws too. They were really good at the free throw line, and they took over when needed to. And then after that, if I'm giving you the top three teams to go win a championship this year, Duke 1, Florida 2, I would not have said this before the tournament because I did not like the way that they entered this tournament. If you would have asked me a month ago who would have won the NCAA tournament, I would have said it's either going to be Duke or it's going to be Auburn. Auburn going into the tournament, and I know how good their roster is because we've had Bruce Pearl on this show before many times through the years. You know, we're hoping Coach is going to join us at some point later on in the week before they go up against Michigan. And we've been exchanging some texts. But when I looked at Auburn, I did not like the way that that team was playing. 3 out of their last 4 games being losses heading into this NCAA tournament. And that Creighton team with Ashworth, Kalkbrenner, and McDermott, that's a very good team. And they did a very good job up against Creighton. And now you look at the road for Auburn, especially when Chad Baker-Mazzara got injured, and you see what Todd Pettiford, the freshman, can do, and he's sensational with the 23 points, and Denver Jones with his defense, and Jani Broome, even though he did not play this wonderful game, but even when he doesn't show up offensively in terms of the point department, we know how many rebounds he go grab you. This is just a team that for Bruce Pearl, if not now, when? And you've been to the Final Four before at Auburn. You have won SEC tournaments, and you have won SEC regular season titles, but this is a phenomenal shot for Auburn. And I thought that Creighton game could have been their death blow, could have been the end of them. And now they play Michigan. I have all the respect in the world for Dusty May. I'm a huge Dusty May fan. He will not be an easy out. And Dusty May just knows how to win this time of the year. But I would be surprised. I'm not going to say shocked. But I would be surprised if Auburn doesn't beat Michigan. And then if I could go back and change one pick right now, my Final Four, you know, because I did go chalk. I had Houston. I had Duke. And then I also had Florida, with Florida beating Duke. And I probably would still lean that it is going to be Florida and Duke in the championship game, with Duke winning it all. But even though Chris Beard is a phenomenal coach, and even though Tom Izzo, we all know how great of a coach he is, to come out of that region, if I could change a pick right now with what I saw the other day, I would pick Auburn and all 4 number one seeds to get to the Final Four. So those, to me, are the 3 teams with the best chance to win a title. Duke is 1, Florida is 2, and then Auburn is in at number 3. By the way, I was very impressed with the fandom of Rich Ackerman on Friday. Ack is sitting in the newsroom, right, in his little cubby, and he's broadcasting, and Ack is screaming at the television.
I was in broadcast. I was cheering him on.
No, yeah, you weren't broadcasting.
It was exciting. It was a good game.
But you were sitting there watching the game. And
by
like,
myself.
Like, act. You are a professional broadcaster.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, no nonsense. You get in. You do the job. And you're very serious, and you care a lot about the job, obviously, as you should. Mm-hmm. But it's cool to see the fandom. And we've, like, through the years, right, little Rangers, you know, we'll be on the same page and we'll lose our minds a little bit. But you usually, you know, at least when we're talking, you're mellow.
It's under the surface.
Yeah. UNC, when they were making that run, and I know they came up short, they didn't get the job done on the comeback, but Ack is yelling in the, you know, in the newsroom. We heard him through his little office.
You know, I would, if I was sitting in the newsroom, I wouldn't have done that.
Yes.
If I was in my, little cubby hole where, you know, should be soundproof, but it's not.
But I have seen many days where you have some youngsters that come in here, and there's some youngsters that are a little bit too chatty. Let's just be real. That sit there and they yell and they just want to talk, and it's like you got to do the job. And Ack will go in there and he'll remind them, being the wise professor that he is. Guys, I know it's sports, it's exciting, but you got a job to do. It was nice to see Ack be a kid for a little bit. So, it was nice to see you celebrate. A
couple of minutes. It was a good comeback. It was worthy of that. And, you know, I think I called it on the air when you said, I said, well, I've seen this Carolina team do it before. And
when it got down to four, Ack texted me. I was still here because I wanted to watch the end of the game. Ack didn't know I was here yet. And Ack goes, down to four.
That's right.
So, my condolences, though, for your Tar Heels.
Hey, you know what happens? I thought they could beat Ole Miss. Ole Miss was better. But just like Clemson, the same thing, you know, you got to play a full 40. And that's what really hurt them in the end. They were just, for whatever reason, whether it was, you know, the previous win that knocked them out and all the travel, they just weren't there in the first half. And you can't do that in the tournament. But, you know, I give them credit. As you know, I'm a Hubert supporter, so they – you know, they did themselves proud by playing extremely hard in the second half. I think if anybody thought that they could just fold up and it could be a, you know, 15-point loss, anybody could have said, well, you know, they really weren't that good. They didn't deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. They had everything. They took it, you know, the other night's win took everything out of them. But, you know, they played hard. But that was like also an epitome of Carolina's season. They could shoot the ball lights out, or they could shoot the ball at 20%. And that was what happened.
All righty, we'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio for a news brief. But first up, with the latest Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash, here's Ack.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, get to ask us a question. That's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at @INFSportsNet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag #AskThePros. You could be listening later in the show when we might answer your question. Thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. So some in the YouTube chat are saying that I'm loud and that I'm yelling. So we're going to now alter the show, and I'm going to basically just talk like this, like a boring monotone talk show host. Show no passion, no emotion, no energy. And just put you to sleep. Lullaby. Hush, little baby. Don't be sad.
Have they not listened to the show for the past 10
years? It's like, folks, what the heck are we doing? I'm sorry. I'm loud. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a Northeast guy. Sometimes you think I'm yelling and I'm not yelling. You'll know when I'm really yelling. Alrighty? It's like, what are we doing here? I haven't got that in a while. Like, stop yelling. I haven't got that in a while because people just know what they get at this point.
I've heard you yelling that first segment. If they thought that was yelling, just wait until you get fired up.
You know, how dare I be excited coming off a good college basketball weekend. Here's my guy, John Calipari, his speech to his Arkansas team after they did beat St. John's.
I've done this a long time. I've never had a more rewarding season.
Ooh.
And the reason we made it, I said it, we got a bunch of good guys that have been raised right by their families. And they were able to take what happened to us and know they had to become one heartbeat. I can't worry about me. I got to worry about us. And then we had injuries and next man up. After tomorrow night, There's only 16 teams left.
Damn.
And we're one of them.
Together on three, fam, no six. One, two, three.
Together.
Four, five, six.
I'll tell you, him saying that's the most rewarding season he's ever had is really something. Now, Samter got on my ear and he goes, he says that every year. Is that right?
No, I'm not saying he says that. Every coach says that every year. This was my favorite team to coach. These are the best guys I've ever been around. These are the guys who I'm going to remember forever. Come on. You can't have that every year. Every coach says it.
So, I actually think for him, I don't know if this is actually his most rewarding year, but he could actually sell it this year because he had to leave Kentucky because they were done with him. And he knew he had to leave. And he goes to Arkansas, and who would have thought they would be in the Sweet 16 in year one? I didn't. So that's why I think he could sell it. Here is Derek Queen on what Kevin Willard has meant to the team. Obviously, Kevin Willard, the men's head basketball coach at Maryland.
What has he meant to you guys in the short time he's been with you?
First, he did pay us the money. And then so we got to listen to him. And we all trust him because he's like a player coach.
Here's why I love that. That's just the state of college basketball right now. And I'm perfectly fine with it. You have the first buzzer beater in the NCAA tournament. And it's Derek Queen, right? And he makes that shot. And it's like, hey, really nice moment after the game. What has Coach Willer meant to you? He paid us the money. That's great. Because that's real. That's authentic. That's genuine. You know, is he going to Maryland if he didn't get a bag of cash? I know that's home, but probably not. He goes somewhere that would give him the bag of cash. So on that play afterwards, in the moment, I didn't see it. But when it gets slowed down, you do see Derek Queen take three steps. This is Gene Steratore, CBS, the rules expert analyst, you know, former NFL, college basketball, all that stuff, on Derek Queen's game-winning travel. Should it have been called? Here's Gene.
Look, by rule, the dribble doesn't end until there's firm possession with one hand locked or more times than not with two hands. So we've got to look to see when the dribble ends. Derek Queen makes the turn around the loop. At that point, when he brings it back up, we don't know if that's fully possessed. If he bobbles that at that point, he could continue to bobble that basketball all the way to the hoop without a travel. So you've got to wait until you can define firm possession. Mm-hmm. Now the dribble has ended. As I said, most times than not, it's when both hands come together. You can see when Derek Queen has both hands together, one foot hits, next foot, great shot, great ending. To me, it just really doesn't jump off the screen as anything big.
Stu, did you have a problem with the travel not being called?
I did not have a problem. You don't call that in that situation, in my opinion.
Samter, do you have a problem with the travel not being called?
When Gene Steratore says he could bobble that ball all the way to the basket
idiots.
Without it being a travel, why don't players just like pick up their dribble, bobble the ball for 27 steps, and then, you know, take another step and go and hit a layup? It's against the rule of the law. Once the ball is off the ground, you take two steps. That's it. This idea of he was bobbling a ball, that's a travel.
Have you watched college basketball, the NBA, one time in the last, 10 years?
This is how the game is gone.
How many times you see a guy take three steps?
No, you're right. This is how the game is gone. Carries aren't called. These travels aren't called. But, like, they're clearly travels. And on a game-winning play, mm-hmm. if they win the national championship or something like that, we're going to look back and say it was cheated.
Did you? Stop it. You know what? I love you, Mike. But you just know how to ruin sports at times.
You're going to look back and it's cheated and it's tainted.
Oh, you sound like one of these idiots on Twitter. That's what you sound like. I'm not sitting here saying that you can't make the case that it isn't a travel. Because you can make the case. When is that ever called? And did anyone actually say that in the moment? Or is it just when you slow it down, you need to... All right, we had all this bitching. We haven't had a buzzer beater. Then we finally get a buzzer beater. Oh, it shouldn't have counted. I didn't have a problem with it live in the moment. You slow it down. Yeah, I could see the three steps, like what Mike is saying. But basketball, I know it's two steps, but it's kind of just we've all become accustomed to the three steps. And how many times do we see something? Oh, I guess they just never called traveling, so there's no way the Zebras actually going to call it in that spot. Let's go to Caleb Love of Arizona, CBS, now facing Duke next. His thoughts on that with his old squad.
You know them very well from your time in North Carolina. Duke, how do you beat them?
Hey, I just say, hey, we got to go back. We got to watch film. We got to get ready for them. And, you know, we're going to enjoy this win. But, you know, we'll be ready for them when it's time. We'll be ready for them when it's time.
I like that.
Yep.
Meant to say old foe, but I just don't see how Duke loses this game. Like, I thought Arizona almost gagged that game away up against Oregon. They were up by 10. The next thing you know, it's like a two-point game. And I know that's basketball, too. Does Love have one last fight in him? I guess. You know, it's incredible how long he's been around, too. There's some guys like Caleb or Khalif Battle, who's now on Gonzaga. You know, I remember him. He was Temple, and he transferred into Temple, then went somewhere else. I forget where, and now is on Gonzaga, Arkansas, he went to. It's like these guys, because they got an extra year for COVID and all that, and then, you know, if you sit out of here, but he's been, this is fifth year in college basketball. 3 years at UNC, two at Arizona, but you get one more chance to survive and advance in the big dance, and we'll see if you can beat Duke, but I just don't think that's going to happen. And finally, the Rich Eisen Show, Infinity Sports Network, right before us, had Cam Hayward on, and Cam Hayward said the Steelers are in win-now mode.
You know, I think we're in a state of, urgency. We have a lot of guys that, like myself, that are in the latter stages of their career, and we all want to win. It's not just enough to win a playoff game, which we haven't won in a couple years, and there's a bad taste in our mouth because of that.
When you say a couple years, what's a couple to you, Stu?
That'd be two.
Okay. Samter, what's a couple to you? Couple years.
Couple is two.
And then few, you would say three or four, right?
Three or four, yeah.
Yeah, but like sometimes you could say couple, and I understand it's two, but like, all right, I have it happen. And if you get three or four, that's fine. When you haven't won a playoff game since the 2016 season, that's a lot. So 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, that's 8 years. That's, even if I'm being generous on the couple destination and saying, oh, you know, maybe that's four, then like, what the heck is eight there? That's been a long, long, long time. So Cam Hayward and the Steelers, I think they're going to get Aaron Rodgers. Are they definitely going to win a playoff game with Aaron? No, but he would give them their best chance to do so in a long time. All righty, we'll take a break. When we come on back, the most polarizing man in college basketball, Dan Hurley. You in or you out on Coach Hurley? I'll give you my answer. Next!